A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Every ceasefire draft between Israel and Hezbollah names the Litani River as the dividing line. And yet, nearly 20 years after Resolution 1701, Hezbollah still operates south of it. Tunnels, rocket caches, observation posts, the whole apparatus. So the question Daniel sent us is the right one. What is the river actually doing? And why does this particular valley, the Bekaa, keep showing up as the real problem nobody can solve?
The Bekaa Valley is the part most ceasefire coverage misses entirely. Everyone fixates on the border region, the 30-kilometer buffer, the UNIFIL patrols. But the Bekaa is where the weapons enter the country, where the manufacturing happens, where the command structure lives.
Here's the paradox at the center of all of this. The Litani River is militarily irrelevant. It's 140 kilometers of water that doesn't stop anything. But diplomatically, it's essential. That's what we're unpacking today. The geography, the military logic, and why the Litani River became this totemic line in diplomatic language, even after the rockets that made it strategically irrelevant started arriving by the truckload. The Bekaa Valley is the actual problem, and nobody knows how to draw a line around a valley that's 120 kilometers long, with a friendly border on one side.
The pattern is, ceasefire talks happen, Hezbollah restocks through the Bekaa, Israel strikes the Bekaa, talks resume. Round and round. So that's what we want to unpack today. Why a river became the most drawn line in Middle Eastern diplomacy, and why a valley 60 kilometers northeast of it is where the next war will actually be decided.
To understand why the Bekaa Valley is the real problem, we first need to understand why the Litani River became the fake solution. The Litani starts making sense once you picture the map. It runs east to west across southern Lebanon, dumping into the Mediterranean just north of Tyre. At its closest point, it's about 30 kilometers from the Israeli border.
In 2006, when the UN passed Resolution 71, the idea was straightforward: push Hezbollah north of the Litani, and Israel's northern towns are out of range of the short-range Katyusha rockets Hezbollah was firing. Those max out around 20 kilometers, so 30 kilometers gave you a buffer.
Except the river doesn't actually push anything anywhere. It's not the Rhine. It's not even the Jordan. It's a modest waterway. You can wade across parts of it. The river wasn't the obstacle. The Israeli military presence south of it was the obstacle. The river just happened to be a convenient thing to name.
If you're Iran and you want to arm Hezbollah, you fly material into Damascus, truck it across the border at Masna, and it disappears into the Bekaa. The area between the Blue Line and the Litani River shall be free of armed personnel and weapons, except those of the Lebanese government and UNIFIL. It's a tidy sentence. It fits in a communique. 1701 demanded all armed forces south of the Litani be Hezbollah free. Only the Lebanese army and UNIFIL peacekeepers present. It said nothing about the Bekaa. It couldn't. UNIFIL's mandate is explicitly limited to the area south of the Litani River.
If the Litani is the line everyone agrees to draw, the Bekaa Valley is the space nobody wants to talk about. It sits east of Beirut, running north-south between two mountain ranges, Mount Lebanon on the west, the Anti-Lebanon on the east. Which means the resolution created a safe zone for Hezbollah, just not the one anyone intended.
Hezbollah can rebuild and rearm in the Bekaa with zero international monitoring, and the Lebanese army lacks both the will and the capacity to disarm them there. So you have this bizarre situation where a ceasefire is in effect, UNIFIL is patrolling the south, and meanwhile weapons are flowing through the Bekaa unimpeded. The river becomes a line on a diplomatic document, not a barrier. Once weapons are in the valley, they're inside Lebanon's mountainous spine, hard to spot, hard to strike, and already past any line anyone drew on a map.
So, what's it actually doing in these texts? Every ceasefire focuses on the first one, and pretends the second one doesn't exist.
By the time 71 was passed in August 2006, Hezbollah was already acquiring Iranian rockets that made the 30-kilometer buffer laughably inadequate. But by 2026, Hezbollah has thousands of precision-guided missiles, Iranian Fateh 110 variants, Zelzals with ranges of 200 to 300 kilometers and circular error probable under 10 meters.
Which means a missile stored in the Bekaa Valley doesn't need to be anywhere near the Litani to hit Tel Aviv. The river becomes irrelevant as a range buffer. The only thing that matters is where the weapons enter the country and where they're stored. And that's the Bekaa.
The Bekaa was also Hezbollah's original stronghold. The organization was founded there in 1982 with Iranian Revolutionary Guard support. The valley isn't just a transit corridor, it's the group's strategic depth. It's worse than that. The Litani isn't even a physical obstacle. It's fordable in many places. It's not wide, it's not deep along most of its course. It's a political line, not a military obstacle.
Here's the paradox in its simplest form. A ceasefire that pushes Hezbollah north of the Litani leaves the Bekaa completely untouched. Which brings us to the Bekaa, because that's where the rockets actually come from. And that's the part of the map most ceasefire proposals still treat as an afterthought. You've drawn a line that solves the 1978 problem, while the 2026 problem sits 60 kilometers northeast, fully intact.
Underground rocket manufacturing, storage facilities, training camps. It's not just a transit corridor for Iranian weapons coming through Syria, it's where Hezbollah builds its own. Israel sent about 25,000 troops into southern Lebanon after a Palestinian attack killed 38 Israeli civilians on a coastal road.
The stated objective was exactly what you'd expect. Push the militants north of the river, create a buffer, go home. The operation lasted about a week.
When Israel hit those weapons depots near Baalbek in February, they were striking targets surrounded by farms and villages. The Bekaa is Lebanon's breadbasket. It's where most of the country's agriculture happens, and Hezbollah has deliberately woven its infrastructure into that fabric. That mandate, almost word for word, is still in effect 48 years later. UNIFIL still has about 10,000 troops on the ground.
In those 48 years, has the Lebanese government ever actually reasserted authority in southern Lebanon?
But the Lebanese army is outgunned, politically fractured, and Hezbollah controls the Syrian border crossings de facto. You can't disarm a group when the group controls the entry points for its own resupply. So UNIFIL ends up in this strange limbo. 10,000 troops with no mandate to search private property, no authority to disarm anyone, and a mission that depends entirely on a Lebanese government that doesn't control the territory.
The river becomes this diplomatic placeholder. Every resolution names it, every ceasefire draws it, and nobody enforces it. Fast forward to 2006.
You bomb the weapons depots, disrupt the supply chain for a few months, and then the trucks start rolling through Masnaa again. The February strikes were the latest mowing. The key language, no weapons in the area between the Blue Line and the Litani River without the consent of the Lebanese government, and no authority other than that of the Lebanese government. It also explicitly called for Hezbollah to disarm.
You can draw a line at the Litani, you can patrol it with UNIFIL, you can hold summits and sign documents. But if the weapons pipeline through the Bekaa stays open, Hezbollah is restocking while the ink dries.
There's another dimension here that almost nobody talks about. The Litani River isn't just a military marker. It's Lebanon's primary water source. It irrigates the Bekaa's agriculture. And Hezbollah has used water infrastructure as cover for weapons movement.
The Bekaa Valley. Because, while everyone was focused on the river, the weapons were entering through Syria into the valley, and from there being distributed south. The Litani framework assumes you can stop the flow at the river. The river isn't a barrier, it's a highway with a water feature.
A grim way to put it, but yes. The very infrastructure that makes the Bekaa agriculturally viable also makes it militarily viable, and that dual-use problem makes any monitoring regime exponentially harder. Do you inspect irrigation canals? Every farm with a water allotment?
This is where the comparison to other ceasefire lines becomes useful. The 1974 disengagement agreement between Israel and Syria on the Golan Heights created a demilitarized zone with Andof patrols, and it held for 50 years. Why did that work when the Litani didn't?
First, the Golan has a clear geographic barrier. It's a plateau with steep escarpments, not a fordable river. Second, the 1974 agreement had an enforcement mechanism with teeth. UNDOF had a defined patrol zone. Both sides had incentives to maintain the status quo, and Syria wasn't actively running a weapons pipeline through the DMZ. The Litani has the barrier on paper but no enforcement, and the Bekwa has neither.
The Suez Canal ceasefire in 1973. Similar story. Clear geographic barrier plus enforcement. The canal is 193 kilometers of water you can't ford, and both Egypt and Israel had reasons to keep it quiet. That's not a neighborhood nuisance rocket. That's a weapon that can hit a specific building in Tel Aviv from the Bekaa Valley.
They require infrastructure, climate-controlled storage, specialized transport vehicles, assembly facilities, testing ranges. You can't hide that in a residential basement south of the Litani. Israeli surveillance would spot it immediately. But the Bekaa Valley has natural caves, mountain bunkers, and underground facilities that Iran helped build over two decades. It's the ideal storage environment for an arsenal that's grown from dumb rockets to smart missiles.
The strategic calculus has completely inverted. In 2006, the Litani buffer degraded Hezbollah's capability by pushing launchers out of range. Plus the water angle, which, as you said, most coverage misses entirely. The Litani isn't just a ceasefire marker, it's a resource, and that changes the calculus in ways that don't show up in UN resolutions.
Let's put some numbers on why the Litani stopped mattering as a buffer. In 2006, Hezbollah's arsenal was dominated by Katyusha-type rockets, range of about 20 kilometers. The Litani sits roughly 30 kilometers from the Israeli border. That 10-kilometer cushion was the entire strategic rationale. Push Hezbollah north of the river, and Haifa, Kiryat Shmona, Nahariya, they're all out of range.
Then the Iranians started shipping longer-range systems. That's a radical departure from 1701's framework.
That's Tel Aviv from deep inside Lebanese territory. The Litani buffer became mathematically irrelevant the moment those systems arrived. You could push Hezbollah 50 kilometers north and the Zelzal still reaches. But asking them to surrender the Bekaa is asking them to give up their strategic depth, their supply chain, and their entire precision arsenal in one move. That's not a negotiation. That's a demand for capitulation. And Hezbollah knows it.
That's where we hit the political reality that makes the Bekaa a veto point. Hezbollah's entire legitimacy inside Lebanon is built on being the resistance. Their political party, their parliamentary seats, their social services network. It all rests on the military capability. The Bekaa Valley is the physical proof that they can still fight Israel. Surrendering it isn't a concession. It's abdication.
You've got a negotiation where one side is asking the other to sign away its reason for existing. That's not a stalemate. That's a structural impossibility. Iranian weapons fly into Damascus International Airport, get trucked across the border at Masna, and from there they enter a network of storage facilities, manufacturing sites, and tunnel complexes concentrated in the northern Bekwa around Baalbek. The Alma Research Center has published satellite imagery analysis showing fortified underground facilities, not just caches, but assembly lines. Hezbollah builds rockets inside Lebanon now. They're not solely dependent on Iranian shipments.
That's a qualitative shift. An armed group that imports weapons is vulnerable to interdiction. One that manufactures domestically is a different problem entirely. Resolution 1701 says the LAF, with UNIFIL support, ensures no unauthorized weapons south of the Litani. But the LAF can barely pay its soldiers. Lebanon's economy collapsed in 2019 and hasn't recovered. Soldiers are moonlighting as taxi drivers.
It's not hidden in the mountains. It's hidden in plain sight among farms and villages. You're starting a civil war. The LAF knows this. Hezbollah knows this. The diplomats writing these drafts either don't know it or pretend not to.
UNIFIL is in an even stranger position. 10,000 troops covering roughly 1,000 square kilometers. They can patrol, observe, and report. But they cannot search private property without Lebanese government permission, and they have no mandate to use force to disarm anyone. That's the part I think gets lost. UNIFIL patrols the south. They have observers, checkpoints, patrol routes, but the Bekaa is a complete blind spot in the international monitoring architecture. Resolution 171 simply doesn't apply there.
The Lebanese army is supposed to fill that gap, but it can't.
Then there's the third dimension, the supply chain. The Bekwa isn't just a storage depot. It's the last link in a logistics corridor that starts in Tehran and ends in Hezbollah's hands. Iranian cargo planes land in Damascus. The weapons move by truck through Shia militia territory in Syria and cross into Lebanon at Masna. Once they're in the Bekaa, they're inside Hezbollah's home terrain.
This is what makes the Bekaa fundamentally different from the Latani zone. South of the Latani, Hezbollah is operating in contested territory, exposed to Israeli surveillance within range of quick airstrikes. The Bekaa is their rear area. It's where Iranian advisors train their fighters, where missiles are assembled from kits, where the underground bunkers have been built over decades with Iranian engineering. The pattern since 2024 has been especially pronounced. Ceasefire talks intensify, Hezbollah restocks through the Bekaa, Israel launches airstrikes on depots near Baalbek or in the northern valley, talks stall, talks resume.
The Iran connection is the part that gets left out of ceasefire diplomacy entirely. The Bekaa is where Iranian influence becomes Lebanese military capability. Iran needs Hezbollah as a deterrent against Israeli strikes on its nuclear program. That's the part the diplomatic language never captures. A ceasefire that only addresses the area south of the Litani is a ceasefire that leaves the weapons pipeline intact. You're signing a document while the trucks are still moving.
There's a grim irony here. Resolution 71 was supposed to create a Hezbollah free zone south of the Litani. Instead, it created a monitoring free zone north of it, and Hezbollah used those nearly 20 years to dig in on both sides of the river. The tunnel south of the Litani that Israel discovered during operations in 2024 and 2025, those were built after 1701 passed. The resolution didn't prevent anything. It just gave Hezbollah a jurisdictional boundary to exploit.
When Daniel asks why the Litani keeps appearing in ceasefire drafts despite all this, the answer is that it's the wrong question applied to the wrong geography. The river is a diplomatic reflex. The Bekaa is the actual strategic terrain, and nobody has figured out how to write a resolution that reaches it.
That's where the two-front problem comes into focus. Any ceasefire that only addresses south of the Litani leaves Hezbollah's command structure completely intact in the Bekaa. They can resume rocket fire at will because the decision makers, the logistics coordinators, the manufacturing base, none of it is touched. You're not disarming a group. You're asking them to pause while they restock. You can't separate the military infrastructure from the population without massive displacement.
We saw this in February 2024. Israeli airstrikes hit targets in the Baalbek area, deep in the Bekaa. The IDF said they were hitting precision missile facilities. Dozens of civilians were killed. Hezbollah got exactly what it wanted out of that. A propaganda victory. Images of dead civilians. International condemnation of Israel. The valley functioned as a military asset and a political asset simultaneously.
Compare this to Gaza, and the similarities are striking. Both are dense civilian areas where an armed group has built underground military infrastructure. Both present the same impossible choice. You can't destroy the weapons without killing civilians, and you can't leave the weapons without accepting the threat.
The Bekaa is roughly 10 times the size of the Gaza Strip, and unlike Gaza, it has a direct land border with a friendly state, Syria. You can blockade Gaza. You can't blockade a valley that's 120 kilometers long with an open eastern flank. The smuggling routes don't go through tunnels under a border fence. The Bekaa clause was a diplomatic fig leaf. It looked like enforcement but had no actual enforcement mechanism.
Hezbollah rejected it immediately, which tells you they understood exactly what it would mean if it were ever implemented seriously. The December 2025 draft also floated a Bekaa monitoring mechanism, some kind of international observation presence, but it was vague on who would do the monitoring and what authority they'd have. Hezbollah saw the word monitoring and said no. The theory was the Gulf states have leverage over Lebanon's Sunni factions, and France has historical ties, so maybe you could build a coalition that actually has teeth.
How did that land?
193 kilometers of water you physically cannot cross without bridging equipment, and both Egypt and Israel had reasons to keep it quiet. In both cases, you had a real geographic barrier plus an enforcement mechanism with teeth. It died before it reached a formal draft.
If the Litani is the wrong line and the Beggia is too big to control, what do we actually do? Let's talk about what this means for understanding the news, because that's where Daniel's question really lands. How do you listen to a ceasefire story and know what actually matters?
Here's the mental model I'd offer. Whenever you hear Litani River in a news report about Israel, Hezbollah negotiations, mentally substitute BK al-Fali. The Litani is the symptom. The BK al is the disease. You hide weapons transfers inside the infrastructure that keeps the valley's farms alive, and that creates an impossible dilemma for any monitoring regime. Do you inspect irrigation canals? Every pumping station?
It's almost elegant in its uselessness. You draw a line that was relevant in 1978, you write a resolution that sounds serious, and you ignore the 120-kilometer smuggling corridor that makes the line meaningless. The Litani is the diplomatic equivalent of locking the front door while the back wall is missing.
Once you make that substitution, the news starts making more sense. When you see a headline about ceasefire talk stalling over withdrawal terms, what's actually being negotiated is whether Hezbollah gives up the Beqaa. When Israel insists on verification mechanisms, they're asking for access to the valley's underground facilities. The Litani is the language diplomats use. The Beqaa is what they're actually fighting over.
Second practical filter, any proposed ceasefire that doesn't address the Beqaa Valley smuggling corridors and weapons storage is structurally doomed. The 2006 framework failed because it ignored the Beqaa entirely. What does this mean for someone actually following the news? Daniel's question gets at something practical. When the next ceasefire announcement drops and the headline says, agreement along the Litani, what should a listener be looking for?
One question cuts through the noise. Does the agreement include the Beqaa Valley in the monitoring zone? If the answer is no, if the enforcement mechanism stops at the Litani River and the Beqaa is untouched, then the ceasefire has a built-in expiration date. It's not a peace deal. It's a resupply window.
That's the actionable lens. The Litani is a useful geographic marker. It gives diplomats something to point at. It provides a recognizable line on a map. But it's a failed strategic boundary. It was designed for Katyushas that maxed out at 20 kilometers, and Hezbollah now fields rockets that can hit Tel Aviv from deep inside the Beqaa.
That brings us to the third thing. For listeners who want to go deeper than the headlines, there are specific choke points to track. The Masnaa border crossing is number one. It's the primary official crossing between Syria and the Beqaa Valley. For the policymakers in the room, the Lebanese army needs both resources and political cover to secure the Syrian border crossings, Masnaa especially. Right now, Hezbollah controls those crossings de facto.
The other one is Al-Qusair. It's a Syrian town that controls the road from Damascus into the Beqaa. The uncomfortable through line in all of this is that you can't solve the Beqaa problem without solving the Hezbollah in the Lebanese state problem. And that's not a military question.
These two locations, Masnaa and Al-Qusair, matter more than any river. They're the geographic pinch points on a supply chain that starts in Tehran and ends in Hezbollah's bunkers. If you see them in the news, you're watching the real war. This is the question that sits underneath everything we've been talking about. Can the Beqaa Valley ever be effectively demilitarized without a broader Lebanon-wide political settlement that addresses Hezbollah's role in the state?
That's the uncomfortable thing to sit with. We've had 48 years of theater, 48 years of drawing the same line, passing the same resolutions, deploying the same peacekeepers with the same impossible mandate. That's the structural problem. Hezbollah isn't a militia operating outside the Lebanese system. It's inside it. It holds seats in parliament. It has ministers.
Which is progress of a kind. Admitting the problem exists is step one. No ceasefire draft has ever touched that. Every proposal, 1701, the 2025 U.S.-French draft, the various iterations in between, they all treat Hezbollah as an external actor that could be pushed behind a line. But the Beqaa isn't an external problem. It's Lebanese territory, and Hezbollah operates there with de facto state sanction.
Which means the Litani is a convenient fiction in more ways than one. It's a line drawn for rockets that no longer define the threat, enforced by a mandate that doesn't reach the supply route, in a country where the group you're trying to constrain is part of the government you're asking to do the constraining.
There's a forward-looking dimension here that makes all of this even more urgent. Precision-guided munitions and drone warfare are evolving fast. The next generation of threats doesn't care about 30-kilometer buffers. A guided munition launch from anywhere in the Bekaa can hit a specific building in Haifa. A drone swarm doesn't need a firing position south of a river. Geographic barriers become less relevant with every technological iteration.
The entire architecture of 20th century ceasefire geography, draw a line, patrol the line, enforce the line, may be obsolete for the conflict we're actually watching.
That's the future implication worth sitting with. Verified disarmament means inspectors with access to the Bekaa. It means monitoring Ad Masna. It means a political settlement that gives the Lebanese state a monopoly on force, not just in the south, but in the valley where the weapons actually enter and get built. That's a generational project, not a ceasefire provision. And if Israel decides the only way to degrade that arsenal is to preemptively strike the underground facilities around Baalbek, the civilian cost will be catastrophic.
500,000 people live in that valley. The bunkers are under their towns. The assembly sites are near their homes. You can't surgically remove Hezbollah's strategic depth from the Bekaa any more than you can surgically remove a tumor that's grown through the surrounding tissue. The operation kills the patient.
Hezbollah knows that. The civilian population isn't an accident of the strategy. It is the strategy. Every missile stored under an apartment building is a choice designed to make the military target politically unstrikable. It's Gaza logic, but on a scale 10 times larger and with an open border to resupply.
The urchin and the dragonfly, sharing an architect. For 40 years, diplomats have drawn lines and called them solutions, while the reality 60 kilometers northeast kept growing. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes, find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon with whatever Daniel sends next.
Pauses during which the arsenal gets bigger, the bunkers get deeper, and the precision gets better. The 2006 ceasefire was a pause. If the 2026 draft produces anything, it will be a pause. The Bekaa doesn't go away during a pause.
The thing I keep coming back to is that everyone involved knows this. The Israeli military planners know it. Hezbollah's commanders know it. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard knows it. The diplomats writing the resolutions probably know it too. The Litani framework persists not because anyone believes in it, but because admitting it's obsolete means admitting the problem has no diplomatic solution.
Which is a hard thing to say in a UN Security Council chamber. We have no resolution for this. So instead, you get Resolution 1701 extended and re-extended year after year, while the real war preparations continue in a valley the resolution never touched.
Daniel, that's the answer to your question. The Bekaa Valley is the strategic concern because it's where the weapons enter, where they're stored, and where the capability lives. The Litani River keeps appearing in ceasefires because it's the line everyone can agree to draw while ignoring the valley. Nobody can agree to address. The river is the decoy. The valley is the war.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1910s, a group of French naturalists working in the Atacama Desert advanced the theory that axolotls could regenerate their limbs because they had absorbed trace minerals from meteorite dust unique to their original lake beds, a hypothesis that was taken seriously for nearly a decade before anyone bothered to test whether axolotls regenerate just fine in ordinary tap water.
Right.
The secret to limb regeneration was space dust in a lake. Glad we cleared that up.
That leaves us with a final thought. The next time you see a map of the Israel-Lebanon border, look past the Litani River, find the Bekaa Valley, trace the road from Damascus to Masna. That's the map that actually matters. Everything else is diplomatic theater.
If you want to dig deeper into the geography behind the headlines, you can find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep,
The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.